Good morning, everyone. On this beautiful, cold fall day, so we can't gripe about it being hot anymore. Okay. Yes. Well, I invite you to look around, look in front of you, behind you, beside you. And know that your community, your church community. And we live in many communities in our life, a community, a coming together for a common purpose, a communion together. We have a community in our family, a community in our neighborhood, a community in our workplace, community in the organizations to which we belong, a community of humanity of which we all are a part. I believe it's important that we have community, and I believe that we have been set up to have community. You know, we have not all been placed on our own individual planet. Thank God. How boring would that be? But we're all thrown here together, aren't we? Messy, chaos, love, sometimes dislike, joy, harmony, discord, all of it, all those emotions that we feel and mirror with each other. And I believe that by working through that, by validating, it helps us all move forward. You know, we don't just grow spiritually individually, but collectively as well. So community helps us do that. Community gives us an opportunity to remember that we are one, that we are connected. An opportunity to remember that we are, each and every one of us, needed and important. An opportunity to remember that we're here to love and support one another. And mainly an opportunity to see more of God. So the first one, to remember that we're one, because I think at our core we know that, is just remembering it. You know, in the Lord's Prayer that we sing here every Sunday, the first words, our. It's not yours, it's not mine, but it's ours. Certainly Jesus traveled in community, although he did go to the mountains alone to pray, to be re-energized, but he traveled with a group, his disciples. A man by the name of Professor Lorenz, who was an 18th century American mathematician and meteorologist, came up with a theory called chaos theory. Anyone heard of that? Well, chaos theory says that everything is related. Is my mic working okay? Okay. That everything is related, that the smallest thing in the universe can somehow change everything. And out of that grew the butterfly effect. Now, the butterfly effect says that a butterfly, with just the movement of its little wing, and you know how tiny a butterfly wing is, can move the air enough to set up a weather pattern that can be felt thousands of miles away. Isn't that fascinating? I thought, wow, what does that tell us about the connection that we all have with everything? With everything. And then community offers us that opportunity to remember that we are needed and important, that we're not here by accident, that we all bring our gift. When I was in New Jersey, I lived on the 10th floor of an apartment building in Hackensack. You've all heard of Hackensack, New Jersey? And if I looked at a distance, I could see the skyline of New York City, but if I looked just below, it was the Hackensack High School football field. And it taught me a lot about teamwork and about being needed. When the school year would start, just at daybreak, I'd hear the band getting ready to practice. In the beginning of the school year, there was a lot of discord, I can tell you. It was hard to figure out what they were trying to play. But each one would meet and each one would do their part until they got to the point where the first football game, they came out marching and they made beautiful music as a community, as all working together. And it was on that same field after they would practice that I would see the football players do the same thing, that they would come out and each one, whether a quarterback or running back or kicker or whatever, would learn to come together as a community to move that football forward, which was the idea of the game. The importance of community. A rabbi friend of mine said that if one person was missing from this planet, that the world would not operate the way it should. Even if it's for a small time, whatever time we're here, that we are so needed and important to the community. And then to remember that community offers us an opportunity to mirror who we are, to validate that or heal it, whichever we need to do. That as we look out to other people in the community and see those qualities that we love and admire, to realize that that connectedness that we have, we wouldn't recognize that in them if we did not have it in ourselves. And it's a great validation of who we are. And on the other hand, if we look out and go, eeks, ugh, can't stand that person. Well, that too is a mirror, isn't it? That we wouldn't recognize that unless we had some of that in us, and to use that as an opportunity to heal. That we find ourselves in many different roles in community. Sometimes the leader, sometimes the follower, sometimes the griever, sometimes the comforter, sometimes the student, and sometimes the teacher. But all working together in that community, reflecting off of one another. A few days ago, I went to a hand blessing. Now, I didn't know what that was going to be, but I had gone to a chaplain meeting with all the different facilities that are under our management company. And a couple of the nuns there said, "We're having a hand blessing. Would you like to come?" Sure. Hey, I never pass up a blessing. It was one of the most beautiful rituals I have ever seen, as people were mirroring off and reflecting off of one another. They had the residents in a huge circle. This was a nursing home. And then they had the staff, nursing, dietary, housekeeping, all the staff, in the center of that circle. They gave each of the residents in the outer circle a cotton ball that had anointing oil on it, and it smelled like nard, which is what Mary anointed Jesus' feet with. So the ritual started with the caregivers, the staff, lifting their hands and facing all the residents and saying, "Thank you for the opportunity to serve you. I look at you and it reflects back to me a blessing." And then in turn, the residents did the same as they raised their hands and blessed the caregivers. But the most beautiful part was at the end, when each staff, each caregiver, walked the entire circle of residents, stopped in front of them, held out their hand, and the resident anointed them with that cotton ball with the nard on it. I love you. Thank you for what you do for me. And the other person would say, the beauty and love you see in me is just a reflection of you. There were tears and hugs. It was a beautiful, beautiful ritual. And I thought, what a beautiful example of what community can do to uphold and support us. So community offers us the opportunity to remember we're connected, that we're all one. The opportunity to remember that we are all needed and important. And to realize that we're here in community to mirror, to love, to support one another. But to me, the greatest of all the opportunity we are given from community is that it gives us a bigger picture of God. Now, in unity, we teach that God is immanent, indwelling, and also transcendent. Charles Fillmore's writings talk about that. That within each and every one of us is that divine, that we are all here radiating and expressing God together as community and individually. And part of seeing more of God is realizing the divine in each other. Scott Peck, who's most famous for his book, The Road Less Traveled, wrote a book called Community and Peacemaking. Anyone read that book? In that book, he has a story entitled The Gift of the Rabbi, and I'd like to share that story with you. The story begins at the monastery in the middle of the woods, I think around the turn of the century. And the monastery had fallen on very hard times. There was a secular movement the decade before, and people just weren't coming to support the monastery any longer. So year after year, it began to decline and decline and decline, until they were down to 5 brothers in the monastery. They were nervous. What's going to happen to us? Is it just going to dissolve? Well, also in those woods, there was a little hut nearby. And in that hut, several times a year, the local rabbi would come for a retreat. They never had communication, but they knew he was there. Well, the brothers, after a while of being alone, just 5 of them, and spending so much time in prayer, they almost became psychic. So they would know when the rabbi was around. Ah, the rabbi's in the woods, they would say. So one day, the abbot decided that he would pay the rabbi a visit. So he went to the little hut and knocked on the door and introduced himself after all these years and said, I've come to visit to see if perhaps you can give me some ideas on how we can bring more people to the monastery. You know, we're dying. And the rabbi said, well, I can't be of much help because no one comes to synagogue anymore either. Well, they spent the day praying and reading the Torah and becoming good friends. And as the day ended and it was time for the rabbi to go back to town, the abbot again asked, so there's nothing you can tell us that could help us build a monastery? And the rabbi said, no, but what I can tell you is that one of you is the Messiah. Oh my God, the abbot thought, one of us is the Messiah. So the rabbi left, and then all the way back to the monastery, the abbot is in shock. How could it be? One of us is the Messiah? And then he wondered how in the world he's going to tell the other brothers. What's he going to say? So I'd like to read now what Scott Peck wrote next. The Messiah is one of us. Could he possibly have met one of us monks here at the monastery? In that case, which one of us? Do you suppose he meant the abbot? Yes, if he meant anyone, he probably meant the abbot. He has been our leader now for more of a generation, and he's a wonderful man. But on the other hand, he might have meant Brother Thomas. Certainly, Brother Thomas is a holy man. Everyone knows that he is a man of light. Certainly, he could not have meant Brother Eldred. Brother Eldred gets grouchy sometimes. But come to think of it, even though he's a thorn in people's sides, when you look back on it, he's almost always right. Often very right. Maybe the rabbi did mean Brother Eldred, but surely not Brother Philip. Philip is so passive, a real nobody. But then, almost mysteriously, he has a gift for something when you need him. He just magically appears by your side. So maybe Philip is the Messiah. Well, of course the rabbi didn't mean me. He couldn't possibly have meant me. I'm just an ordinary person. Yet suppose he did. Could I be the Messiah? Oh my God, not me. I couldn't be that much of you, could I? So as the brothers contemplated in this manner, the old monks began to treat each other with extraordinary respect on the off chance that one of them just might be the Messiah. And on the off chance that each monk himself might be the Messiah, they began to treat themselves with extraordinary respect. Because the forest in which it was situated was beautiful, it so happened that people still occasionally came to visit the monastery to picnic on the tiny lawn and to wander along some of its paths. As they did so, without even being conscious of it, they sensed the aura of extraordinary respect that began to surround the five monks. And it seemed to radiate out from them and permeate the atmosphere in which they were. There was something strangely attractive, even compelling about it. And hardly knowing why, they began to come back to the monastery with more frequency to picnic and play and pray. And they began to bring their friends to show them this special place where people treated each other with such extraordinary respect. And then it happened that some of the younger men who came to visit the monastery started to talk more and more to the old monks. And others came and others came and others came until the monastery began to grow. And then people in the neighboring communities began to hear about it. And they all began to ask the question, could you be the Messiah? Could I be the Messiah? And they all began to treat each other with extraordinary respect. Beholding the divine in each other. And what that did, how it changed them, how it changed the community, how enlarged what they saw as God. The Messiah. So now, just as we opened, I'd like for you again to look around, even stand up and walk around if you wish. And this time, as we greet one another, to do it with Namaste, or I behold the Christ, or I behold the divine, or whatever you wish to say. With that question answered for us, who is the Messiah? Who is the light? You know, we know that it's in each and every soul that we encounter. And think of what a world this could be if we really got that. The extraordinary respect that we would show to one another. But it's who we encounter each and every day. The Messiah, the divine. So again, if you feel comfortable doing so, just look at your neighbor, greet them in that manner, get up, walk around, do whatever you want. Beholding the Christ, the divine in one another. Namaste. Namaste. Yes. Namaste. So as we greet each other with beholding the divine, the Christ, the Messiah, namaste to each of us, knowing that we're all under the umbrella of the one presence and one power, the statement of truth that we share each time we get together as Unity folks. So I invite us now to speak these words of truth as printed in your program, that there is only one presence, one power in the universe, in a work in my life, God the good, omnipotent. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and in my life, God the good, omnipotent. It is.